Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is episode 67 and it is the 6th of July. We've got a really cool show for you guys coming up. We're going to be talking, what was that?
Can I just...
what was going on there?
Can I just apologise in advance to the listeners?
Go.
That I have a cold and I'm going to just sound terrible.
Yeah, you don't sound too right in the first interview we have. So we are going to be talking to IPA Research Fellow Morgan Begg. He's back. We're all looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And we're also going to be talking to Charles Jacobs, a policy analyst down at the CIS, or probably up at the CIS,
if you're going geographical,
about the new CIS report about millennials. We talked about it on the show a few weeks ago, but we want to get deep dive into the issue, talk about millennials, how they're voting at the moment.
The youth.
The youth, Pete. They scare me, but we want to study them. Even though we are them.
Wow. I thank you for including me that.
You're
that
a millennial. I think it's 1982 is millennials.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was more because you said I was youth.
You are youth.
Well, I'm 33, but.
Yeah. But.
Thanks.
Yeah. You're young. You're a young 33.
I'm young at heart.
Yeah. If you shaved that beard, you would be like 25, I reckon.
Okay.
I've recently shaved my beard and I look a lot younger. So what's underneath millennial? That's how I look. Cool. Toddler. Anyway. Enough riffraff. Let's get into the show.
Everyone's chewed out.
It's just me and Pete now. Nina's unfortunately along for the ride. But Nina, how are we this week?
Oh, good. Okay. Everyone's having a cold.
Yeah, everyone's having a cold. Pete's going to get us sick by the end of the show. Let's get into the issues this week. So, big one this week was Tim Sudamasan, our old friend, the Racial Discrimination Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission, in charge of racial discrimination cases around Australia. Well, not really, but like he will publicise times that he sees that there's been racial discrimination. Tim and the IPA have clashed over the years, over 18C, as you might imagine. Probably a long-time listeners, maybe long-time members of the IPA will have been aware of a few of those spars. So he is coming to his time at the Human Rights Commission. It's coming to an end in August.
Yeah, it's like the farewell tour rolls on.
Yeah, it's the John Farnham one, and you hope it's not like John Farnham once, in that John Farnham always comes back for another farewell tour. So you hope this is it.
But like yesterday, we were like, we thought it was next week, and then we checked, and it was August.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So he sat down with The Age this week for this. A Fairfax paper, and it got syndicated around. But he sat down with without fear or favour, like a reflection on the look of his time back at Racial Discrimination Commissioner. So, and like the article said, on the eve of his stepping down. So we're like, oh, he's stepping down this week. We should plan a party. But he's there till August, so there might be a few more.
Just take your taxpayer coin and retire.
Exactly.
While on the beach.
Well, get into that in a bit. But so we want to talk about that article because it was pretty funny reading, and there was a few shots at the IPA. All I can know from that is that we are in his head. He doesn't stop thinking about us. But yeah, he was letting it rip, to be honest. He was really sitting back and just... throwing a few punches left, right, and center.
Well, he called the Australian an alt-right rag.
Yep, a poor man's Breitbart as well. I thought it was very interesting.
That is a big sledge.
That's a big sledge. But also it means that he thinks a Breitbart is a rich man's thing. So does Tim Sudamasan really like Breitbart? That's all I can assume from that.
That's an interesting take.
So, hopefully he's probably got a few copies lying around.
Hasn't ruled out politics, lucky for us.
Oh, thank goodness. Could you imagine if this was the last we ever saw of him? Cool. So when he mentions the IPA, he talks about how the IPA is obsessed with 18C. Can't imagine why. Mm. Can't imagine why we're obsessed with something so trivially as freedom of speech. It was just really funny. So we did plan the show around a sort of Tim Sudamasan in memoriam. That's Pete's sickness coming through there.
Carry on.
He is on for another month. I don't want to rule out him beating any of these. But Pete, do you have a favourite memory of Tim Sudamasan's time at the Human Rights Commission?
My favourite, and I'm glad you gave me warning of this, was my favourite moment is I think the when people mispronounce my name, when flight attendants don't try and pronounce my name, they're racist.
Oh, I didn't see that one. That's
amazing. Like the hardest part of my job is when I get in a plane and the person says, "Oh, I can't pronounce your name. Can you please tell me?" It's like, oh, so they should get it wrong.
Yeah,
that shows. Anyway, he thought that was disrespectful.
If that's the hardest part of your job. Don't leave. Don't leave that job. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised the business
James
class...
Bolt, it's never really come up.
I'm surprised the business class attendants don't...
My favorite one was basically I mean, it's the classic, but like actually asking people to complain under 18C if they found Bill Leak's cartoons offensive.
Mm.
Like, that's actual baiting of, you know, really trying to unearth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. So
I thought you were going for humorous anecdotes rather than serious criticisms.
Yeah, well, I realized, well, you led off with the funny ones. So okay. I don't, like,
yeah, but that's us. That's
I think,
us.
We, yeah, let's, yeah.
Balance.
It's just like, we can laugh all the time, but it's still just like, this guy is not right. Anyway, yeah. So we're going to be talking to Morgan Begg about that later in the show. And we'll sort of pitch his, him what a Morgan Begg racial discrimination commissioner would look like. Mm. I think that'll be fun. Cool. Pete, do we want to move on to another story?
Yes. All right. Now, I've got a new line of inquiry for the Financial Services Royal Commission, and that is why all four of Australia's major banks took investment advice from Greenpeace.
Mm.
Because all four of Australia's major banks did take investment advice from Greenpeace and don't invest in the Adani mine, because apparently coal is evil and coal is dead. But as Jo Nova on her excellent blog, and I'll just read out the address for you in case you want to check it out.
While you look for it, can found something it. Be evil and dead at the same time? Oh, found it? Cool, keep going.
JoanneNova.com.au points out that coal is set to become Australia's biggest export.
Glad you looked that up. It's a tough one to remember.
I couldn't remember if it was Joe or Joanne, but it's Joanne.
Okay.
G'day, Joe, if you're listening. Coal is set to become Australia's biggest export earner once again. The Department of Industry, Innovation and Science, and we love government departments, shows total coal exports are forecast to reach $58.1 billion in 2018-19, overtaking iron ore for the first time in a decade. So, and the good thing about this is there's only 300 years of profit to go with coal in Australia. And as...
I mean, it's running out. 300 yeah, years.
We've got to make hay while the sun shines. As Joe says, very, very humorously, do we open up more coal mines now and rake in the dough, or try to make the weather nicer in 1,000 years' time?
It's a tough question to ask. Mm. It's a tough question to ask. If answer. Anyone's bad at...
I found it quite easy well. To ask.
Yeah, you didn't start it once.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe the people that are struggling to pay energy bills might be able to give us an answer from their perspective, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the takeout from that is don't take investment advice from Greenpeace. No. So if you are looking for something to talk about with home insurance, make sure you are going to a financial contractor and not Greenpeace.
Mm. In case you were thinking about it.
People come to this podcast to laugh, but I want them to learn.
Well, that's really noble of you, James, and I think they have.
Well, we can only hope. All right, we'll move on to another story. So this came out from Rebecca Urban in The Australian on, I want to say yesterday or potentially Wednesday.
This week. Is
this week.
What I say when I don't know.
It's a good tip. Another fun thing people can learn.
Yeah. Recently. Recently is another one.
Recently. So Rebecca Urban, The Australian. So Australia National University. They've been in the news a whole lot recently over the Ramsey Centre scandal, I guess. So they stuck up themselves. They're like, hey, we're an open place of learning, we're an open place of teaching, anyone can apply. And this week, so they are, it's come out that they now demand all new staff undertake, quote, cultural awareness training that endorses a treaty with Indigenous Australians. So obviously, whether or not we should have a treaty with Indigenous Australia, it's a pretty contentious issue at the moment in Indigenous affairs. There's two sides to the issue, as there are to all things. But at ANU, at the cultural awareness training, you take a quiz to test their knowledge. They are asked to address the statement legally. We cannot have a modern treaty process in Australia, and with the correct answer being false. Now, if you say true, you are told to take the quiz again.
Yeah.
So that's how you become a staff member at ANU. You actually have to believe in the treaty.
Yeah. You literally can't. And that's a highly contested thing, whether it's true or false. That's not like a, you know...
Yeah, like, can you have a treaty with your own people is just, like, a fundamental legal question, I guess. Like, there are... It's not, like, a yes or no kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not, yeah. Like, you know...
It hasn't been
I
settled.
Can't think of a yes or no question, but you don't...
Yeah,
yeah. Literally, so this is meant to be this place that has academic freedom. But obviously, yep. They can, you know, academics can think whatever they want, but you literally can't get employment there
yep.
without taking up a political position.
Yes, which is bad.
Which is sorry. Bad.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's bad. And the other thing
that's
is
a yes or no. Is that bad? Yes.
Yeah. There's plenty of Indigenous people out there who don't think we should have a treaty.
Yeah.
So if you're an Indigenous academic trying to get a job at ANU who happens to think we shouldn't have a treaty.
Yeah. You're going to fail cultural awareness training.
You're going to fail cultural awareness training.
Sorry. Tough.
So riddle me that.
Riddle me that indeed. Cool. So if you want to read more about that, so that was in The Australian. Matthew Lesh here at the IPA had a few quotes that ran in that article, so make sure you're looking out for that. I think we shared it on Facebook yesterday. Cool. So we got another story here. Walk away, Pete.
Well,
talk us through it.
Brandon Stracker is a New Yorker who has released a viral video explaining why and how he left the Left the Left.
Okay. Yeah. Don't make too much fun. Half a million. Still, that's the title of like Dave Rubin's breakthrough video. We're still trying to get him on the show.
Well, and then, oh, I love Dave Rubin.
video was great.
Okay.
Please come on our show.
Half a million views for Brandon Stracker. And this has gone viral. And basically this guy is a person in New York who, you know, member of the Democrats, lefty, blah, blah, blah. And then within a year has completely changed. And a quote from the video is, "I will no longer be part of an ideology that represents everything that contradicts my values of unity, equal opportunity, personal empowerment, compassion, and love." And what this has done is caused a, what are they called? Hashtag thing.
Social media storm.
Social media storm where all those people on Twitter describing their moments of how they left the left. And it's a really great video. You should check it out. It's some of those real simple things, you know. Why hasn't anyone done this before? Like, it's so obvious. But
yeah,
if you watch the video, it's awesome. Like,
A lot of use of very epic music.
Yeah, epic music.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. I really felt that was coming through.
Yeah.
Very epic.
You make it. Yeah, we like the video.
I don't like the music. I like the video. Just didn't like the music.
But I thought the video was awesome.
Yeah, I liked 95% of the video.
Okay.
The 5% I didn't, have a guess what it was.
Yeah, well, the music. And he was like, he's got this real kind of, I don't know if he's done acting or anything like before. He's kind of got
an actor. It says on his Twitter bio.
Well, he's an actor.
/actor.
As James correctly points out, he's an actor. And you can tell. It's really good. Check it out. Google it. It'll come up straight away.
Well, I was going to say, so we got this walk away campaign and we do have a reformed lefty on the show with us right now. So do you want to tell your story?
Oh.
Question without notice.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, well, cause obviously, well, I mean, plenty of people.
I'm big on the questions without notice. That's what happens when I'm producing a few different podcasts in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, plenty of people at the IPA used to be lefties. In fact, heaps of people who are now not lefties used to be lefties. I was more of a lefty at uni and stuff like that. But when I spent time in South Africa working at a microfinance institution, which is, I don't want to get into a whole story, but does financial services for really poor people. And so my transformation was economic because and then the values and everything came next. It was like the things that we do to try and help poor people just don't work. In Australia, there's heaps of jobs relatively heaps of jobs for people to live a good life, but there's not in South Africa. Why is that? And I realized that's sort of where it started.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Thanks. That was deep.
Shouldn't be so ashamed of that. That was actually really nice to listen to.
I wasn't ashamed of that.
Okay, cool. So we'll run through some of the...
You
kept on, you know, looking down. Anyway, we'll move on. Push forward. Nina, push forward.
Okay.
Kate, push forward. Cool. So we'll wrap up a few of the things that the IPA has been doing this week. So we've had a whole lot of articles. They're all available on our website, ipa.org.au. Some absolute crackers. So this morning, actually, Andrew Bushnell The Spectator of Australia, talking about... So with the World Cup coverage, Lucy Zelich has become quite famous for making sure that she pronounces all the names as native speakers would say it. It's pretty cool. She's done the research. She practices, clearly. Really cool stuff. And then, you know, all these like social media trolls start going at her, and then she responds saying like everyone should pronounce it. So Bushnell's sort of talking about those issues as well. So have a read of that. We also got Sinclair Davidson in the Australian Financial Review talking about Australia's tax cut debate. And how the Jeremy Corbyn stuff just isn't going to work in Australia. Deborah Sims, this was a really, really cool article. We've had her on the show a few times talking about the right to try. So she wrote an article in the Adelaide Advertiser about the right to try, about how people on clinical drug trials, how people with terminal illnesses should be able to apply to be on clinical drug trials if it will save their life before the drug becomes illegal. That was really cool. And I think shout out for Deb. So the drug that she's talked about on this show that she used to have to fly back to, it was like developed in Melbourne, so she had to fly back to London twice a year to go get it, is now available in Melbourne. So that's a huge chunk of Deb's life that she's got back from traveling between airport and airport. That was really cool. Matthew Lesh, Spectator Australia, University's Closed Mind, talking about about how campus censorship and, you know, same sort of deal with the ANU stuff that we were talking about earlier in the show. And Scott Hargraves in the Spectator Australia talking about plastic bags in the Newson State. So Coles and Woolworths, we're going to be talking about a particular story about that, but Coles and Woolworths, their plastic bag ban is coming to effect.
Doesn't write much, Scotty Hargraves. When he does, wowee.
Wowee indeed. So you can read all of that on our website. And we'll now go to this interview, but before we do, thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and subscribing. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, through our Hey What Did I Miss email, and breaking news, might even be to Pete and Nino, I don't think I've told you, we're now available on Spotify.
Oh, wow.
So that was... Thank you to intern Adam for helping me out with that yesterday. But the IPA podcast is now available on Spotify.
Big ads.
So if you do have... Adam. Yeah. I thought you just meant we now open advertisers. And I'm keen for extra dosh, so... if you do want us to sell a product, we will do it.
Sorry. I was trying to do some cash for comments gag.
But we do have a bunch of nut bars here, so Carmen's holler at us.
Delicious. Delicious muesli bars.
Yes. God, we were doing so well there. Anyway, where were we? If you do have a friend who wants to listen to this podcast, doesn't have iTunes, but they do have Spotify, they can now listen to the show. Nina, how can people become even more involved with your IPA?
Well, just become a member. Visit our website at ipa.org.au and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become a member and a part of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Beautiful. Let's go to those interviews now. Okay, we are now joined by Charles Jacobs, policy analyst at the Centre for Independent Studies. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you going?
Charles is the co-author with Tom Switzer of the new policy paper, Millennials and Socialism, Australian Youth Are Lurching to the Left. Now, this study found that young people who didn't live through the Cold War, so the millennial kind of generation, they're romanticising socialism, and it's probably worse than people are expecting, would seem to be the take up in the report. So talk us through your findings. What did you find? What did you learn from the report?
Look, I think the banner-head finding here is that 58% of Australian millennials have a favourable view of socialism, only 18% view it unfavourably. So what we've got here is a vast majority of millennials who are now aged 22 to 38, so they're actually coming into influential positions in society. A large group of millennials now believe that socialism is actually a favourable ideology. That's something that we don't necessarily agree with, given the checkered history of socialism and its failed practical experiments across the 20th century. When you look at places like China, you look at Venezuela, we look at what happened in the Soviet Union, we find these results quite troubling.
Charles, what do you think this is?
Look, I think it goes back to probably some of the issues about house prices, low wage growth, unemployment amongst young people. People looking towards socialism might not necessarily be talking about a class revolution. They might be thinking a bit more about equitable redistribution of wealth and that side of things without fully understanding what socialism means. I think capitalism has been given a bit of a negative vibe around it at the moment, and that came through in our polls with 59% of millennials suggesting that capitalism has failed. So in face of that, it seems that millennials are turning towards socialism.
Yeah, cool. So this can sort of seem like the experience of the 20th century was that young people tend to go for socialism, and then as they sort of learn about the economy and learn about how to budget their own finances, they tend to go a bit further to the right. But you had an article today, again with Tom Switzer, where you're talking about how this generation seems just a bit more uniquely to the left than generations previous to it. Where does that sort of come from? What do you think is unique about this generation?
Well, we wanted to have an analysis of that theory that, you know, you vote left when you're younger and become more conservative as you get older. And we had a look back at the data and found that actually this has not been the case throughout history. So in the last 40 years across a couple of key Western countries, the UK, the US and Australia, young people have actually voted very much in correlation with the rest of the electorate. So, you know, when the Republicans have had a big win in the United States, young voters have backed them. When the Conservatives have got up in the United Kingdom, young people have backed them. But in about 2000, which is when millennials were first becoming politically active, this starts to change. So young people have begun to vote increasingly to the left over the last 15 to 20 years. And that is in direct opposition sometimes to the wider electorate. So if you look at the United Kingdom, for example, the Conservatives have actually built their overall vote consistently since 1997. But at the same time, they've lost a large percentage of youth vote, which has gone to Labor.
That's really interesting, because that is an assumption that people make, that people vote left when they're young and further to the right when they're older. So I'm really surprised to hear that. And, you know, we were very interested in that part of the analysis. A question for you is, do you link this phenomenon to other forms of populism, you know, around the world at the moment, or is it something separate?
No, I don't think so. I think it just goes back to the groundhog issues, you know, house prices and inequality. When you have sitting around a table at a restaurant and talking about our lives as young people, I'm a millennial myself, you know, people are frustrated about their chance of buying a house, and especially in places like Sydney and Melbourne. They're frustrated at the opportunities for employment out there. You know, that's where it comes from.
So not like the allure of someone like Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn. You reckon it's just meat and potato issues like house prices?
Look, I don't know if Bill Shorten's got the same sort of allure as Bernie Sanders does.
I'm quite sure he doesn't.
Yeah, so I don't know if we have that emblematic figure, but maybe that figure will emerge at some stage. And maybe you could argue perhaps that people are taking inspiration from the youth quake in the UK with Jeremy Corbyn and with Sanders in the US. Perhaps that is coming through a little bit, but I think when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, it's about real issues.
All right, cool. So IPA also had a report out in the last year or so, and I don't want to get into a report off here, but it's sort of our one sort of...
That never ends well.
That never ends well. It's a long, arduous journey. But so our survey showed that 2 out of 3 young people said they would consider starting their own business. Now, that sort of, you know, in a sense, it can jibe with the idea that they're also left-wing, but I guess there's also a sense that, like, as you say, there's the inequality sort of crushing them. They want to own their own house and they want to start their own business. Do you think that there's going to be a reversion to the mean over time, that young people are going to, like, especially this generation, maybe they're more left-wing than usual, but when they have the entrepreneurial spirit and when they start to really think with their hip pockets on these things, do you think they'll become a bit more right-wing?
Yeah, look, it seems that that data tells us that older people are still voting to the right. So, you know, that's an interesting point you raise there, because this could have real political implications if these young people actually stay left as they grow older. It could have real ramifications for the right side of politics, because they won't have that traditional older vote that they now rely on. So, you know, I'm not sure whether the life will hit these people in the face or not, but I think it's, if it doesn't, and if they do stay voting to the left, then it could have some real implications for the Liberals in Australia, the Republicans in America.
Charles, what do you think the solution to this problem is? How do you convince young people that socialism's bad?
Look, I think you just have to look at the success of capitalism, and probably the best argument for mine is that a place like Australia has really great services, and that comes from the profits of capitalism. You tax a profit, you don't tax a loss. So if we have an economy that's highly productive, we're going to be able to have better services all around. And I think that's something that can resonate with people who generally, when you talk to them, do want better services.
All right, cool. So the report is Millennials and Socialism, Australian Youth Are Lurching to the Left. So that's available on the CIS website. And there's also a whole lot of other work that Charles and Tom have done around that. You can read the articles and so on. We'll get into another story. So in the preparation I did for this interview, Charles, I had a look at your profile on the CIS website and saw that you were an extra on Hacksaw Ridge, which if people don't know, is a war film made about 2 years ago. What was that experience like?
What role did you play?
Look, it was a fantastic experience. I've done a lot of movie and television extras throughout my time at university as a really? Job on the side, but this was the one I'd done the most on. I spent 3.5 months working as an extra on Hacksaw Ridge. I was fortunate enough to be chosen as a group of 8 extras who featured heavily around the main cast. So on a daily basis, we were interacting with some of the main stars like Andrew Garfield and Vince Vaughn, for example, and Mel Gibson there as the director as well. So you got a really good picture of filmmaking on the ground, which is not always as exciting as people may think, especially when you're doing a war film. So, for example, we were armed with real weapons firing blanks, and after every single scene, every single gun had to be checked and cleared. That was, you're talking about 100 people here, so you might film a scene and then not do anything for half an hour. So it's not necessarily as glamorous at all times.
Yeah. I've also done like some extra stuff, and there's a lot of standing around waiting and then you're just hoping it doesn't rain. One of the people you mentioned there is something I want to get into. So the director of the film was Mel Gibson. Now, I don't want to be breaking news to people, but Mel Gibson is kind of known as a pretty prickly person to work with. Do you have any experiences with him?
Look, I actually generally found Mel really welcoming and very friendly to extras. you might know from your own experience, extras are often not the most respected people on a film set. But Mel was very happy to have a chat to extras, and he was happy to make us feel welcome and comfortable in that situation. I did see a couple of occasions where I think Mel is a real perfectionist when he's filming a scene, and if something's not working out, he'll let everyone know very clearly. So I think, you know, I've came to admire his professionalism and perfectionism there. It was really admirable. And he's a quirky character. He'd often sit aside at lunch by himself for no reason. You know, it's just, I think we just came to respect him for who he is.
All right, I want to talk parties. What was the, did you get to go out with the cast?
No, we didn't, unfortunately. We had a lot of great nights as a group of extras, you know, a lot of young blokes who all became really good mates. And, you know, you actually almost felt like you're at war at some times because we're all sitting around there for so long doing nothing.
Thank you for your service. All right, cool. So the report is Millennials and Socialism, Australian Youth are Lurching to the Left. Charles, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Charles.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're now welcome back to the show, one of our favourites.
Oh, yeah.
Research fellow Morgan Begg. It's been a while, been too long, I'd say, but welcome back.
Oh, well, not long enough. No, well, thanks for having me.
Okay, the shots have already fired. Rocket good
start. I'm spiky.
Now, Morgan. Morgan is an absolute pillar here at the IPA for our work on freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And one of Morgan's adversaries, I might say, is wrapping up very shortly and had a few shots of the IPA this week. So, Tim Sunamasan, Race Discrimination Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission. He was talking to The Age. He said that he was, you know, talking about all the people that he's angry with as his mother. That was basically the article. Yeah. Was like
because this is what public servants do as they leave it.
Just absolute cut loose. And we got a few barrels. Started talking about how the IPA was obsessed with 18C. I can't imagine why. But Morgan, did you have anything that you wanted to respond to from Tim?
Everything.
At Tim.
At Tim. Oh, yeah. The one that caught my attention was accusing groups like us of wasting members' money because we believe in such fanciful things as freedom of speech. But I'm also a member of the taxpaying community of Australia, and I feel like that Tim Sukomasan has really been wasting my money.
Yeah, fair enough.
At $340,000 a year. Thank you very much.
So you've called for the abolition of this position before, haven't you?
And many other things.
Yeah. So what happens next?
You've called for the abolition of the Australian Parliament.
I accidentally did that.
If you take the wording of one of Morgan's media releases in the way it wasn't intended.
But in the way it was clearly read, Morgan called for the abolition of Parliament.
Yeah. So what happens next now that this guy's moved on? Who's the next appointment and what does that mean for Australia?
I'm not too sure who...
I don't think it has been announced. I didn't see it either.
They're still going through that process. Okay. I haven't even heard. I haven't even heard rumors myself of who that will be.
What do you reckon?
The nature of the position is that the Race Discrimination Commissioner, as stated in the legislation, is that they're a politically active public personality. There, the terms of the legislation say that they have to defend the objectives of the Racial Discrimination Act. They have to defend the existence of the Human Rights Commission and the objectives that it was set up for. So there's not really a scope to make a good appointment.
No.
So it's
a rough sell.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get the job.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't think I'm in line for it. Yeah, no.
Yeah, so we're not rating your chances?
No.
What would a Morgan Race Discrimination Commissioner look like? Mm.
I'd be very absent. I don't think...
minimalist approach.
I think
fair few sick days.
I'd try to put the biggest broom through that department as I could.
The Scott Pruitt of Australia.
That's it.
Cool. So...
What was it? The State Department in the US had some... their rate of hires were... 6 out for every 1 person in, or something like that.
Might have been
I like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty good policy to have. Cool. So we'll move on. We'll fly through a few things because it's been a while. Morgan's got a lot of silos he needs to fire, and we are going to be the outlet. So, US Supreme Court, big thing this week. So, yeah. Justice Kennedy is resigning, he's out of here. Trump gets a second nominee, I think, second appointment.
This is his second nominee to the Supreme Court, yeah.
Which is a big thing.
Yeah. Like, well,
how many do you normally get?
Oh, well, it depends on how many retire during a president's term, but...
Yeah, it's
like... But two nominations within his first 2 years is actually quite unique.
Yeah.
That's actually quite unique, and it's incredibly important because the Supreme Court, the judges of the Supreme Court wield so much power because their constitution has so much work to do in either cancelling out laws that have been passed or creating new rights out of thin air. So
famous cases recently being gay marriage came down to the Supreme Court, course, Obamacare came down to the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you
mean?
So they just, if there's a debate over a piece of legislation, it ends up in the Supreme Court more than Australia, is that right?
Just yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's always an angle to attack a law's constitutionality in America. It seems that way.
Anyway. So it's much more important than the High Court in Australia.
Yeah. Well, the Australian Constitution is much more limited in many respects. That's okay. Right. So it has a smaller scope. But that said, it is still very important in Australia, who's on the High Court. And the actual distinction between what happens in America and what happens here is that in America they actually have a debate about who's on their High Court, and we don't. It's usually, it's a very secretive process that happens behind closed doors, and there's no real oversight or accountability for it.
Did the Prime Minister choose it?
The Attorney General formally makes the recommendation, yeah.
Right, so I was going to ask about that because, like, in America, Scalia, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Kennedy now, and, you know, whoever's going to be the next appointment, they're all, you know, sort of political celebrities. Like, people know who they are, they're discussed, but
yeah.
I can't name you a single person on the High Court in Australia.
No, you wouldn't. And most, and, you know, 95%.
You'd be able to name a few magistrates.
Sorry?
You'd be able to name a few magistrates.
Yeah, and they know what they did. But, yeah, so why is that?
Well, I think it comes back to just the... In America, there's a very public process. The nomination is put forward, and then that nomination is tested in the United States Senate, and that has to achieve a certain amount of votes, and it goes through a very transparent process. And this, you know, sometimes takes, you know, some amount of time, and there's a lot of debate that occurs in that period. But in Australia, it's the Attorney General asks the Law Council, asks the Bar Association, it asks you know, a couple of other groups, and then it puts together a list, and then it chooses one.
Right.
And then that gets sent to the Governor General, and that gets approved. And that's pretty much it.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's also a big thing about, like, whether or not in America it's huge. Oh, are they going to appoint another Republican person or a Democrat person? And, you know, you think it wouldn't matter whether, like, what person someone's political allegiances were on matters of constitutional law, but apparently it does.
Yeah. So it's not so much whether someone's Republican or a Democrat.
It's an interpretation.
It's the school of interpretation.
They're just trying to get one back from that last little snapper.
Originalist.
An example I'm thinking of is that Alan Dershowitz, he's a very famous lawyer in America who's affiliated with the Democrats, but he's quite, in judicial and in legal terms, he's quite originalist or conservative in many of the things he says.
Yep.
Those are the...
What does that mean, just for the punters?
And
me and James. And
To be an originalist or to be a legal conservative is you would take the meaning of the Constitution as it was originally intended and not as... this would be in contradiction to what is most commonly practiced in Australia, which is called the living tree constitutionalism, which is the meaning of words change over time and their context changes over time, and that the judges have to change the laws over time to accommodate that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very obviously very fluid and gives judges a lot of power to determine, what does this mean now?
So does that really apply to when the Second Amendment gets brought up in America? It's like original versus... what was the other one? Living Tree.
Yeah.
Is that what they're looking at? Because, like, an original would say bare arms, and then the Living Tree would say, well, that clearly doesn't apply to modern weaponry.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Little scholar over here.
I was very worried there. I got halfway through that. I'm like, do I agree with me on this one?
No. Well, it's the meaning of words as at the time that they're actually passed, as opposed to what we'd like them to mean now when we're looking at them. Yeah. Those are the two schools of thought.
So will Trump choose an originalist? Is that...
Well, all the indications are that he has obviously worked with good people in developing a short list of good judges. So these are people from the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, who are good. These are conservative institutions in America that work in this area. And it looks... the indications are that he chose his first appointment, which was Neil Gorsuch, from that list, and he's proved to be fairly reliable. And it looks like he's also going to pick his second nominee from that list as well.
Amy Barrett?
That's a name that I hear that a lot, and I suppose the indications are that it might be her.
Yeah, cool. She will be interesting. She's like... very conservative, but she's also like a mother of seven, and she's also got this incredible legal career. So it's going to be very head-scratching for people to go like, how do we tell her that she's bad?
I thought Trump hated women.
Yeah exactly. Right. Cool. Let's talk another... let's move on to another one. So GST, it's another one of Morgan's big research areas. Now, the Productivity Commission came out with a report. The government has now responded to it. So where is GST redistribution now?
So essentially, and
do we need to abolish Australian Parliament?
If they don't fix GST, then they just need to scrap Parliament.
Here we go. We've got that recorded. That soundbite isolated.
And remove the laughter just to really blackmail me with it.
Mr. Simpson, no.
So what's happened is that the GST, the process of distributing GST money is incredibly complex, and it's too boring in some ways for a podcast. But read my research report; it's an absolute banger. but essentially, what the Productivity Commission has come forward with is tinkering with the formula. And the government has responded, as governments tend to do, is to say that, oh, we'll make changes, but we'll make it so that no one's worse off. Mm. And so that just means, well, the government's just going to put more money into it. And it's sort of, you know, it's not really much of a reform.
Yeah, it's bad news for our Western Australian listeners. Like, they're still not going to get a good deal.
Well,
but great news for our South Australian listeners. So party it up down there. Cool.
Yeah, I think what needs to happen is that obviously we need to scrap this redistribution of GST money, but as long as states like South Australia are just getting shoveled money in from other states, then they're not going to undertake the important economic reforms that they need to take to generate economic activity in their state.
All right, cool. So we might move on to the final topic. Now, Morgan... Oh. Since you've been gone, something quite major has happened in your life. Well, since you've been on the podcast last.
Yes.
Something quite major.
Quite major.
You've made a hell of a commitment.
I have.
So how is that new couch going? No. Morgan is a new American.
That happened. Yeah. That happened. We did buy a couch. I don't know how you knew, but we did. It's an L-shaped couch.
Ooh, fancy boy.
No. So that's my wife and I, my very newlywed wife and I bought that couch. So.
It's actually the first time I've heard Morgan say my wife.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
No, it feels nice. No. So that happened, it's hard to believe, but it was actually 6 weeks ago now, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah. Have you felt any change come over yourself now that you're a married man? Do you feel even more cantankerous?
I think that was just a gradual process anyway. That was day by day getting more.
He told us he got a cheaper haircut than the one he got before his wedding.
Yeah, I think that's...
Because now it's like, you know, I don't really need to impress anyone anymore. I'm locked in.
Oh, I thought you meant
Well, yeah, that's half the reason, I guess. I think I'm still just digging out of the financial hole. Of...
Oh, mate, weddings are an absolute racket.
They are, yeah. And I was very happy to have both of you there, actually.
Well,
it was a good day. Morgan was large and in charge walking around that room.
Yeah,
very cool to see. Cool. So is that all we got?
That's all we got.
That's all we got. Morgan, thanks so much for coming back.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, cool.
See you, bud.
Okay, thank you to Charles Jacobs and to Morgan Begg for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Let us get into some stories that have made us laugh this week. I want to start. It's been a few weeks. It's been a few weeks since our favorite segment. Q&A clap.
Yeah.
For new listeners to the show, welcome. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. The Q&A clap. So Pete and I, whenever we watch Q&A, which is once every 2 or 3 years, but we get a bit jealous that some people are on Q&A, they just read out their bland opinion, which is basically just this knee-jerk lefty opinion, and somehow the whole room claps.
Yeah.
I also want to extend this to the Bill Maher audience guffaw, because that audience is terrible.
It's a proxy for a broader issue, is that as human beings, we just want to be loved.
Yeah.
And it's easy for...
That's an issue. Like, people should learn not to be
vapid
loved.
Vapid lefties to be loved for stupid stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone just claps because it's like, oh, I agree with that person. I want everyone to know.
Tim Soup Bobasan.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, Pete and I feel jealous. So when we hear someone give a vaucous lefty opinion and they don't get clapped, vacuous left-wing opinion, and they don't get clapped, we feel bad for them. We give them a Q&A clap, and then because we feel jealous, we give ourselves our own Q&A clap. So this week's Q&A clap comes from The Guardian Australia. Where else would I be looking for one? An article by Bridget Delaney. You guys might have already seen this already. It's pretty quickly making the rounds on social media. The article is, as I keep padding for myself, and it's not going too well. So, Pete, do you have any opinions you want to say?
Well, you should
have got it. Okay, shut up. here comes an article from Bridget Delaney in The Guardian Australia. I stopped going to the gym because of Trump. Now I can't open jars.
Okay. Thank you.
So this is an article by Bridget Delaney. She's talking about how she used to be a bit of a gym rat, basically. So loved it. Then Trump got elected and she felt sad. She didn't return to the gym afterwards. I now associated it with Donald Trump, the bad meal that she had and pulling the sled, which was a bet. But basically she's like, my fitness regime fell off because I was so sad about Trump winning, which I'm really sad for her.
Is this when the clap is? Sorry.
No, we already did the clap.
Oh, okay. So, was there a key moment
we clapped?
He's sick.
He's not right here.
Was there a justification? Was she like...
So, it's like she got into a bet with her gym instructor that the gym instructor said if Trump wins, she has to pull 80 kilos on a sled. I'm not a big gym guy, so I don't know what a sled is, but she said, I'll take that. And then Trump won, so she had to do it. She hasn't been back to the gym since because she...
wants to avoid the bet.
She did it. And then she went out and ate a succulent Chinese meal, I think. She ate a meal. I think
she
it was
never
a succulent,
come back.
I think it was a succulent Chinese meal, but it was a meal of some description.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And now she won't go back to the gym. She won't go back to the succulent Chinese meal shop. And it's all Trump's fault.
Okay.
Not hers.
Okay.
Not hers.
Fair enough.
Not hers.
Okay.
I agree.
Trump's fault. Sorry, that's a Q&A clap. So, Pete, do you have anything that you want to blame Trump for and we'll give you a Q&A clap?
Well, I've got lots of things, but what the main one is, long-time listeners will know that I'm yet to complete my thesis for my PhD. And,
what?
Still
going on?
Here we go.
I remember that running joke from a year and a half ago.
Wow. Look at these two.
Completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Dr. Gregory.
So I work, what you guys out there would also know is that I work at a political think tank, the IPA.
Now that's even more surprising.
Now, Donald Trump has created a lot of extra work for people in this kind of area because he's a lot different from other politicians. And that's meant that I've been able to finish my PhD, so it's his fault.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for nothing, Donald Trump.
Yeah, cool. Okay, I would like to say that Donald Trump is the reason that I keep ordering Macca's at 4 a.m. after night out. I haven't quite figured out the means, but I want to just say, Trump, you're the reason that I'm eating a double quarter pounder meal at 4:30 watching The Office.
Thank you.
I gotta do something more productive for my weekends. These burgers are killing me.
That sounds awesome.
It's pretty good. So we'll move on to another story. So Pete, what do you have?
Well, as we know, the Poms are going bananas at the moment because they are into the quarterfinals of the World Cup. They've got a very, very soft draw.
Is it coming home?
I don't think so.
It's not coming home?
Nah, I don't think so.
When do they lose?
Who have they got? I reckon they'll probably win the next one and lose in the semis because the semis have got Croatia or someone else.
Croatia. Yeah.
Croatia or Russia. So they have Croatia.
As a guy that has gone for a team that always did this to me until last year, They will wait until it's completely inevitable that they win the World Cup, and then they will lose it.
Well,
like a 97 minute to go down. That is exactly how this ends.
But the Poms aren't that, like, they're not that good. Like, it's not.
Neither anyway. Was Richmond, right? Neither was Richmond.
That the whole point was anyway. Let's not get down that rabbit hole. But yeah. They're going crazy because they could win, and they won on penalties after losing like 7 penalty shootouts in a row over the decades. Prior to the World Cup, and we just picked up on this now, we apologise for that. Normally we're, you know, right on this kind of stuff. Deputy Chief...
Slipped through the cracks. He thought he got away with it. He thought this guy thought he got away with
it. Yeah, yeah. Now he's getting his bake from the podcast boys. So Deputy Chief Constable Mark Roberts is head of football policing in England, and he said putting England flags all over town when English fans go abroad can be interpreted as imperialistic and create antagonism, and he encouraged English fans not to do it. Now, obviously, this is code for I hate poor people. And the other thing is, of course, it's meant to meant to be antagonistic.
I think I hate joy. I think just in a wider thing. I just hate joy.
Yeah. These drunk blokes waving flags. And,
yeah. So I got a few things from this. Like, one, so just a tip out there. If you're ever flying a flag of a country, just know that you are being imperialistic. Mm. You're not just supporting a country. You're supporting everything that country's ever done.
Yep.
Second thing, what is the head of football policing?
Yeah, what's that?
Well,
come on, Pete. You know soccer.
What's a football policing anyway?
Yeah,
it's policing.
Policing,
policing, sorry, policing.
It's policing for football.
I don't get that. What does that mean?
What they do?
Well, I mean,
so is this guy a big fish?
Yeah.
So that's weird.
Like they have to devote a lot of resources to stop them
waving flags,
fighting each other.
Oh right,
in England. So well, you know, particularly going back. So. That's what his role is, I think. What am I?
What a jerk.
No, anyway, but it's like...
Oh, you're the guy that bought the topic too with the podcast. Sorry, I thought you'd read an article. Anyway.
Yeah, I had a couple of quotes.
Yeah, cool. Okay, cool. I got another one for you. So this week was July 4th, Independence Day in the US.
Yeah.
So happy Independence Day to any of our American listeners out there. Hope you guys had a great time. The Vindicator tried to have a good time. And then Facebook got in the way. So the Vindicator is this tiny newspaper. Newspaper, small town in Texas. And in the lead up to July 4th, they were Facebooking out the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Huge link. Pretty fun. Learn a bit of history.
Read the Declaration.
Yeah. It's going...
Educate yourself.
Exactly. It's going well. And then they put in part 10, consisting of paragraphs 27 to 31 of the Declaration, did not appear. The Vindicator received a notice from Facebook saying that the post goes against our standards on hate speech, and it was removed.
Uh-oh.
Facebook is officially thinking that the Declaration of Independence is hate speech. Now, it's an algorithm, and Facebook have put it back on, but that is very funny.
It is hilarious and shows that they're stupid.
Yeah, it shows they're stupid, and it's like Facebook's like, hey, no, we're friends of conservatives. We're friends of people on the right. We're friends. This is a place for everyone, except the Declaration of Independence. They think can get right out of here.
The Declaration of Independence is for people on the left as well.
You'd hope so.
Is there something in paragraphs 27 to 31 in particular?
Sorry, 27 to 31, it's not like... we hold these truths to be self-evident. It's not like the big stuff. Mm. Is that declaration? It might be wrong. But anyway, it's the 27 to 31's when they start complaining about what the King of Britain hasn't done for them. And one of the things is like insufficient troops in wars against Native Americans. And the specific reference is to Indian savages.
Okay.
That's what flagged it.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty funny.
That is hilarious. Well, going back to that, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights.
That's just off the top of your head, mate.
It is. It's just off the top of my head. Yeah, and that
tattooed on your forearm.
Is, and among those, a life lived in pursuit of happiness. Like, if you're like a massive lefty, there's heaps in there that would trigger you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
equality of opportunity?
Oh, liberty.
No.
People are created equal. That is literally not a microaggression.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Like, that is, yeah.
That is absolutely. Like, we're I treat all people equally.
Yeah.
I don't see race or colour.
People have no... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised any of this got up.
So, yeah, we should be congratulating Facebook.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, I got... Wait, do you want to go or do I go?
No, I'll go. Cool. Al-Shabaab. People might be familiar with Al-Shabaab. They're a terrorist group in Somalia who, through their media agency Radio Andalus, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, announced...
I certainly hope so. I don't want them angry at us. Well,
yeah. Announced they are banning single-use plastic bags in the regions they control because they, and I quote, pose a serious threat to the well-being of humans and animals alike.
They've you don't also... want that.
You don't... You know,
Al-Shabaab does not want human lives being impacted.
Well, you know, obviously...
No, because they want to rule it themselves.
Oh, okay. Nina, playing once they've aired, I like it.
They've also banned the logging of indigenous trees. BBC pointed out this was ironic because they raise a lot of cash through the ivory trade. the obvious irony is that they kill people all the time.
I think that's the most ironic part of it.
Yeah. I did notice Pedestrian said, Andrew Bolt will lose his mind over this one.
Oh.
And there was a link to his piece on the health risks of reusable plastic bags, which I didn't quite understand. But James, do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, obviously we bring it up in the context of Coles and Woolworths also banning plastic bags.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we hit it. I just like, that's just funny to me. It's just, yeah, poses serious threats and well-beings of humans and animals alike. Yeah, yeah. You know what else? Anyway, we've done the joke. Sorry. Yeah, funny stuff.
Well, I mean, it's been tough for Woolies this week. It's been a rocky introduction.
Yes.
You know, they've had to say,
I think one staff member got assaulted, which is not cool.
That's not cool.
Not cool at all.
But they had to give out free bags after that, saying they wouldn't have to. And there's actually a story about a bloke in Sydney who put a whole trolley in his car to it because he didn't bring it back. It's quite funny.
That guy's a hero. We should have him on the show.
We tried. And so, like,
he took our invite and put it in his car.
Their media person away. Has just gone, why this week, Al Shabaab? Anyway, Nanny, you are big on this stuff.
Well, Al Shabaab? Plastic bags.
A lot of fun.
Straws and plastic bags. This is your wheelhouse. This is right in your wheelhouse.
It's my wheelhouse.
Yep.
Plastic bag. This is ridiculous, this plastic bag thing.
Yeah.
Well said.
Well said. All right, fair enough. Okay, that's it for the show this week. Thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, through our Hey What I Miss email, and as of this week on Spotify. So that's really cool. Make sure you guys are listening on that if you prefer. Thank you to Charles Jacobs and to Morgan Begg for those interviews. Really fun chats. And so if you are listening to us on iTunes, make sure you leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. You can also leave a comment for us. And Nina, if people want to become even more of a member of the IPA, how can they become a part?
Well, just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you'll become a member, a part of a loudest free voice of freedom.
Okay, see you guys next week.
See ya.